Would you turn with me then to Matthew chapter 6? And we have been in this particular chapter for some time, spent a good deal of time in the Lord's Prayer, and we're beyond that now. We're looking now at verse 19, if you turn there with me. But we're really continuing the same message, analyzing it, studying it a little bit. Matthew chapter 6, beginning in verse 19. Now, up until this point in our message in the Sermon on the Mount, we've really been looking almost entirely at the spiritual character of one of those people who this passage here calls blessed in the Beatitudes. Blessed are so-and-so. We've been talking recently about that person, the blessed person, the Christian's relationship to God, and particularly in worship, his worship of God. But our Christian life, as you know, is not really lived primarily or even entirely, certainly not entirely, in the internal soul just between us and God. There's more to it than that. It's lived out in practical matters on a daily basis as the soul practices its faith in the arena of the world with other people. So we deal with all kinds of things. We have bills. We have mortgages to pay. We have interpersonal relationships, business dealings, interactions, concerns and troubles that we all have to deal with, which require discernment and application of the things that we know to be true in our faith, in our spiritual character. And so Jesus, as he teaches his disciples, begins to address these things in the remainder of the sermon. He's talked about the inner character of the believer. He's talked about the relationship we have in worship. But now he's going to say, here's how some living of that out begins to happen. And he begins this section that we're looking at today. He would have us know that though the Christian is created to live in this world, in the temporal world, he's also, as a believer, as one who has been called and adopted into God's family, we're called to live with our loyalty, not simply to the temporal world, but to the citizenship we have in heaven. Both heaven and earth are very much a part of the Christian's life and his reality. And both of those are going to make demands on the Christian's life. But only one of them can ultimately do so legitimately, with loyalty given ultimately to that one. So only one has a true sovereign master. Only one has provided lasting rewards for us eternally and so on. And this section of Jesus' sermon then focuses on these two opposing worldviews, two perspectives that we're looking at. And we're called to settle as we look at this on what is the better of the two. How should we look at this world? And the first worldview is that which values most highly this current world that we're living in. The treasures, those things which are here that can be acquired and experienced entirely on this earth. And the second is that kingdom which promises treasures which largely, though there are very much experienced in this life, I would say even probably more so, are to be experienced, the treasures at least, in this afterlife. But I want to make a distinction, and that is that we're not merely talking about deferred gratification versus sort of immediate gratification, as if both of those rewards were equal. And the question is then just mostly, do you want to have it now or do you want to wait for it? It's not as though that's the issue. Because Jesus points out the value of one of these is so vastly greater than the other that it's not even worth comparing. One is eternal. One is just temporal. It's momentary. One is durable. It lasts forever. One is corruptible. One keeps one in darkness while the other one reveals light and so on. So let's look as he spells these out for us. We'll just read verses 19 down through 24. Jesus continues now in his sermon. He says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." Now Jesus goes on, but we could almost say amen at that point and just say, here's the message word to look at. You cannot serve both God and money. By reading what we read earlier in Matthew chapter 25, I wanted to point out that the Bible often calls us to do some remarkable tightrope walking. To do two things at the same time that seem almost to be opposing one another. For the sake of relevance to the passage that we're going to look at today, I want to choose and give the example of what we've just had before us. That is being asked on the one hand to be a good steward of what the Lord has given to us, to plan ahead, to multiply what we have, wisely seek to multiply what resources the Lord has given to us for his kingdom purposes. That's one thing we're called to do. And at the same time, as we just read, we're not to build up treasures on this earth. That's a tightrope walk in some ways. In one parable, Jesus condemns the man who didn't invest and multiply that which the Lord had entrusted to him. He condemns him for it. That is a worthless man, a wicked man. And in the other parable, Jesus condemns the rich man who apparently did so well in his storing up that he put it in barns. He was having to build extra barns for doing so. The Lord condemns that one. Now, of course, we know in the first instance that being a good steward and multiplying wealth is always to be done, not for the sake of the wealth itself or with the hope of being able to trust in what we've stored up. We know that. The man who stored up his wealth in barns is condemned for placing his trust in what he has done. And we all know that, right? So it's easy to see the difference between growing wealth with the hope of putting your hope in it for security and the growth of wealth for the purpose of using it in the kingdom, right? That's easy to understand. Nonsense. Baloney. I would have to say it's easy. It's not easy at all. We struggle with that tightrope walk all the time. It's not easy at all to tell where it is that we fall over the line from padding our bank accounts, our IRAs and our 401ks, so that we won't be a burden on someone else in our old age. And when we begin to place our hope and our reliance and our security on those things, and what's in those bank accounts and IRAs and 401ks, it's not an easy thing to do, to walk that tightrope. It's not easy to avoid living in this world and to begin to focus your life on this world, on the rewards of this world. We very much like the rewards of this world. Are you being honest with yourself? Do you ever do your work in this world because you like to be rewarded by people's acknowledgement, by people's praise? Well, that's a treasure on this earth in some ways. What about financial empowerment? The more money you have, the more you can do. When you succeed in your work, generally we like to be rewarded for it financially. And money is a powerful tool on this earth, without question. And don't we like to use that tool for self? And I get to say this after I just returned from a resort in the Smoky Mountains. And when we got there, we were a little discouraged because it wasn't quite as nice as some of the other resorts we've been to. And I have to be careful about this as I look at this and say, you know, what's going on here? Don't we like to use the rewards of this earth for selfish things, for home improvements, for a new vehicle, for clothing and technology and entertainment upgrades and so on? You know, getting a better couch is not wrong. Getting a couch that matches with your curtains is not a bad thing. In fact, going on vacation and enjoying a resort is not a bad thing. What though if I learn about a need of some seniors in a retirement home who are having difficulty paying their bills? Well, that sounds like a kingdom issue, but I'll still like to replace the old sofa that doesn't match our curtains. What do I do? My point in bringing that up is this is not easy, and you know it's not easy. So though this is a familiar passage, and we've likely heard the challenge before, let's listen to Jesus one more time as he speaks to us and counsels us on this matter of treasure. Where do we put our heart? Where is our heart in these matters? He begins with a discussion of the contrasting longevity of the treasures that we might have. Moth and rust and thieves. I don't know if you've ever been robbed, but you've probably experienced moths. And I know you've experienced rust. We're fully aware that if you were to go out and buy a brand new Rolls Royce, that in time the Rolls Royce would rust. As it's driven, it'll inevitably get scratches on it. My car didn't start this morning, and it's relatively new to our family. We got it last February. It didn't start this morning. So if you get that Rolls Royce and you drive it at all, you're going to get paint chips on the front. And the paint job is going to be damaged. If you have a leather interior to your Rolls Royce, you're going to eventually have cracking and so on. It'll get older. But as I thought about this and this idea that's corrupting, it's going to go away, how does our world think about that today? How does the American, the average American, who's relatively wealthy compared to the rest of the world, how does he deal with this? I'm convinced there are some people who say to themselves, so what if my Rolls Royce leather cracks? I'll simply keep replacing it. Those cloths that the moths eat and the fancy cars that rust and if thieves break in and steal. You see, I've got insurance. I've got more in the bank. I'll just go make more money. As if the mantra of this age is, I'll just throw that one away and get a new one. Yes, things decay. Yes, things corrode and they waste away on this earth. But like the ad campaign for Doritos, brand chips with a slight alteration, consume all you want. We'll go make more. You see, it's not a problem that we have moths and rust and corruption and so on, because we're in a society where you can just go get more. That's the mindset of too many affluent Americans. Jesus' words about earthly treasures, then, how do they fall on American ears? The affluent American ears. Yet we need to remind the world, and I think we need to remind ourselves, what's also found later on in Matthew chapter 24, that it's not just the car, it's not just the cloth, it's the world that's wasting away, and our time on it that's wasting away. Matthew 24 speaks about heaven and earth passing away, and needing to be thinking about that. It's not just that things get older, it's not just that they wear out. But your time to store up treasures on a different mindset, a different kind of treasures, of eternal treasures, is wearing out and it's eventually going to be gone. Some of you remember at the other church building, when we were still worshiping there, you may remember what I had was my little eternity scroll, a scroll of paper. It's one of these printer papers that's made in a big roll and it goes on forever. I used that as my eternity scroll, and I tried to use that as a sermon illustration of eternity. It was a roll of white paper with a line down the middle, a magic marker line all the way down the length of the whole length of this paper. And what we tried to do is mark out on that line just 1 inch, and we called that 1 inch 1,000 years. Our lifetime on that earth, we were rather optimistic by this, but we said, let's let 1/10 of that 1,000 years represent our lifetime, so 100 years. And we then made the point that if we labor during that 1/10 of an inch for what is temporal on this earth, and we ignore the remainder of the eternal scroll, we're being foolish. We are the greatest of fools. Think of it in a different way. If we were to see a man buy property and move his entire family and his entire company to the base of an active volcano, and he buys plans and he buys materials and he's going to build himself an elaborate 12,000 square foot house at the base of this active volcano. And then he's also going to buy a 150,000 square foot warehouse that he's going to put down there at the base of that house. He loves this place. Even though geologists are telling him, what are you doing? This is crazy. They're predicting a massive explosion within the next year or so. If that were to happen and we saw it happening, wouldn't you think this person is nuts? Something's wrong with this man's mind. He's not looking at things correctly. He's lost sight of what's about to happen to his house and to his warehouse, perhaps even to his family. In the same way, storing up treasures on earth, treasures that will in a short time be completely erased, without using your limited time to prepare for those treasures in heaven, that in contrast to the moth and rust are never going to fade away. That would be foolish. That thinking would be crazy thinking. It wouldn't be looking at reality. It's not in tune there, and it certainly has lost sight of what's about to happen to those earthly things. Jesus condemns the thinking that says life really consists in the abundance of one's possessions. But he goes beyond that. He forbids the Christian from hoarding those earthly things, those earthly treasures on this earth. Now, it's not that he forbids savings. It's not that he forbids enjoyment of these things or financial planning or ownership of private property or any of those things. Even nice property, even luxurious property. God expects us to use his creation for that end, by the way. Did you realize that in 1 Timothy 6:17 it says, God richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. That's a remarkable statement. God actually provides things so we can enjoy them. That's a good thing. But when it comes to the accumulation of these things beyond the point where they're even useful, or they can be enjoyed and shared, then we're beginning to join that man on the side of the volcano in storing up our goods in barns that are going to be burned up and are going to pass away. That's not just some sort of, that's kind of silly. No, that's actually what is condemned by the scripture here. So this is why is this so serious? Why is this so serious? It's because the same kind of godlessness that leads to hoarding possessions also leads to a hardness of heart toward God, toward the needy, and toward the poor. It's so serious because what we treasure reveals what's going on in our heart. And our heart is uniquely made. Uniquely made. When someone really values something, he likes to keep it close to him. He likes to keep it close to his heart. Maybe you've seen movies where you've got the spy who's carrying the briefcase full of diamonds, right? And when he sits down in the airplane, you realize that he's not just carrying the briefcase, but it's handcuffed to his wrist so that nobody can just snatch it away from him. He likes to keep it close, and he keeps it very, very secure. Now, that's a good picture, I think, of the reality that our hearts are actually tethered to what we value. We are attached to what we value. We don't part with it very easily. The man living in his new luxurious home at the base of the volcano truly values that property and that piece of land. And the warnings are regularly sent to him. It says, man, you're crazy to live at the base of this volcano. You've got to move. But he doesn't want to leave. And I've seen real live situations like this where in Australia, I remember when the bushfires were coming, they're burning and you can see them traveling towards you. The wind direction is toward you. And these people are sitting in their houses and they say, I'm not leaving. This is my house. I'm going to protect it. I'm going to do what I can. And the fire comes and burns the whole place up. That happens again and again. Why is that? Because we're tethered to what we value. We don't want to see it go. We want to keep it close to us. Place your value not on the material things, a piece of land, the house, the warehouse, oh man who's sitting at the base of the volcano. Place it on your life. Don't you value your life? Don't you value your family? Tether yourself to that's what's going to last. It's of infinitely more value. Now, one might say a man who was told that there was an explosion coming from the volcano, and you could point to him and say, look at the smoke that's billowing from the top of that volcano. It keeps churning up there. This person is somehow blind to what's the best thing to do. You're not seeing what is right and good to do here. Well, Jesus said in this passage, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are good, your whole body is full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. Verse 22 then introduces this idea of eyes and windows. It's an interesting combination. The eye is the window, he's saying, letting in light to the body. The light we're talking about here is not just physical light. He's really speaking more of spiritual situation. And the eyesight being referred to is that perspective that of one's life. And Jesus is alluding to the fact that a window or a perspective on life that values most highly the material things of this temporal world is a window through which little light can shine. If you're valuing this earthly stuff and this earthly situation so much, then you don't have light to see eternity. You're missing the value of what's really out there. The heart and the eye in these verses both refer to the inner person that sets the direction for life. So I ask you this morning, what is the state of your spiritual eye? Are you even able to assess, and this is something each one of us ask honestly, I think, am I able to assess how clearly my window sees? I mean, whether it's been smeared by the material things, the pursuits of this world and so on. Have I smeared it so much that I'm not even seeing correctly? I can't even evaluate the situation correctly. Well, this passage is meant to help you diagnose the condition. What's the state of your window? an outlook darkened by valuing the wrong things in this world results in living in the dark and living day by day, valuing that which has little relative value and acting accordingly, building buildings at the base of the volcano and so on. A person living in the light is going to take the wisdom of the parable of the man who sold everything to acquire the pearl. You remember that parable? He went out and sold everything he had so that he could get the pearl. He's going to take that to heart. What's the implication of that? We need to value highly this one thing and go after it and pursue it. Now, in contrast, you could tell a tale of a man living in the dark who goes out and sells everything he has so that he can acquire a piece of wet cardboard. Wet cardboard? You're going to sell everything? There's something wrong there. You're lacking light. You're not seeing the truth. Such is the man who chooses to store up treasures on this earth and ignores what's going on spiritually in heaven. You're buying wet cardboard. What are you doing? Now, that's obvious if we compare, eternity with a piece of wet cardboard, but it's not quite as easy when we live it out in daily life, looking at what we're doing with our time and our energies and so on. We have to be careful about our eyesight. What Christians need then is a disciplined eye. In this area, it's the eye that flees from temptation. This person's eye is careful upon what we allow our eyes to rest. He doesn't mentally go along with all the advertising, which, by the way, advertising is all about trying to get you to visualize certain things. Visualize yourself behind the wheel of a new car or sitting in that brand new sofa, that leather sofa, the fanciest of new suits, the nicest of cars, whatever it might be. He may admire those things, but he does not envy them or feel he must have them. That's the Christian saying. So be careful what material things you let your eyes rest upon. There's a great danger there. Take it seriously. Your heart is at stake. To what are you tethered? Now, why is it that there's so much at stake? The scripture says here, Jesus makes it very clear at the end. A punchline comes at the end of this little short passage, and he says, you can only have one master. There's only one. There is so much at stake here. There is no less than an eternity with rewards that go on forever and ever in the presence of the Creator who made you. Versus an eternity. Yes, there's eternity, but with no reward and, in fact, punishment that goes on forever as well. You see, the human soul, as it was designed by God, is designed to worship. That's what we're designed to do. We love to put our devotion on something. We love to do that. We're designed by our Maker with hearts that practice that. That's not changed, even though the fall happened. God made us in the garden to worship Him. It was the most natural thing. What has changed after the fall is that now there are alternative things that we place our attention and devotion upon. There are new objects of worship, and Satan has done everything in his power to give you the alternative and say, here, put your devotion on this. Paul in the book of Romans describes this very well. What's happening in the first chapter, chapter 1, verses 23 to 25, he says this. They exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images representing mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. They exchanged the truth about God for a lie, and they worshiped and they serve the creature rather than the Creator. There's the alternatives, the counterfeit. Here, worship this, put your devotion on this. I think we could borrow the language of that passage in Romans and apply it to what Jesus says here in Matthew 6 to say something like this. They exchange the glory of the immortal God for temporal things, like wealth and fame and material goods. And they exchanged the truth for a lie. And they worshiped and they served the created things rather than the Creator. Now, some people would try to say, wait a minute, can't you do both really in a good way? Can't you serve both God and money? Can't you have both? Do I have to choose between the two? The answer is no, because trust is something that can only be fully placed on one thing at a time. And it's interesting that the word mammon that he uses here, God or mammon, he puts the two in contrast. The word mammon literally means trusted things. Trusted things. Interestingly, we always give terms to financial things that parallel this idea. Think about the whole banking realm. We call things like securities. and trust funds. Isn't that interesting? Securities and trust funds. We're using the language of devotion and reliance. But you cannot fully trust in money and God at the same time. You cannot do it. You can't rely on what you have in the bank and rely upon God at the same time. Now, we should understand that money isn't a living entity. It is not spiritual. It's not a spirit in and of itself. It has no life of its own. And so it's not evil in and of itself. It is neutral. What the problem is the heart that deals with money. It's the heart's perspective and the eyesight that it has, the window toward money. One writer has said this in an interesting way. Money is a god in a polytheistic land. It just wants a spot on the pantheon. A few other demigods can reside there too, status, power, pleasure. I would suggest that money is even content to share the heart of a person with God. If it were up to money, it would say, I don't mind if you worship God on Sundays as long as you serve me on the other days of the week. That's fine. But that, in a sense, is trying to apply money, personality to money. And money has no personality. But money is an object of devotion. It's an object of devotion. And the problem is that our hearts aren't designed by God to share in devotion. There's no design of sitting on the fence here. They are all or nothing. That's the way our hearts are designed. Anybody who has a person, maybe it's somebody who's they're dating or they really have kind of fallen for this person and find that that other person's devotion suddenly wants to go elsewhere. What happened? I'm not happy sharing. We know that. We understand the heart that way. And what's more, the God who designed our hearts to be exclusive givers of devotion is himself a God who demands exclusive devotion. He says, and he made it very clear in the Ten Commandments, you shall have no other gods before me. None. You shall have no other gods before me. What's he saying? In effect, he's saying, your heart is to be tethered to me. Tether your heart to your Creator. Tether your heart to your Redeemer. So as a follower of Jesus Christ, our Redeemer, you're called to serve your Lord, whose reward is of infinitely greater value than temporal money or temporal things. Jesus presents a choice between two ways of life here. Will you store up treasures on this earth? Make that your focus in your life? Or are you going to do that in heaven? And this choice speaks to the hearts of people at every economic level. You can be very poor and still have a heart that wrestles with this. And you can be very rich and have a heart that wrestles with this same thing. So it's to all of us. You mustn't misunderstand the message today. Don't misunderstand me. It's not that God is against producing or gaining wealth. Hear me on that. Indeed, he designed a world in which that very thing could happen. By his design that we can do that. Indeed, he designed a world where that happens, and it's often his blessing to grant us that. But we must watch the heart in the midst of that, for they are prone to serving other gods, our hearts. And wealth is among the favorites of that. The heart loves to worship the creature, the created thing, the wealth. So instead, in keeping with the theme that we've had from Matthew chapter 6 as we go through this, and of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, we're to give our devotion to God alone. We're to seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. We're to pray that his kingdom would come. We're to pray and labor that his will would be done on earth as it is in heaven. This is to be our effort. We then see all the material things of this temporal world, not as evil things, but as tools. And sometimes they're very powerful tools to kingdom ends. I think when we talk about the talents being built up and being stored away and gaining and so on, making profit on those, that's what we're doing. We're gaining these for a purpose, to the glory of the master. That's what it's about, is the master's return. So those who have kingdom eyes and who live in the light are those who are notorious for doing something with this wealth. And that is that they're being generous with it. They often are very quick to give it away. That's what the psalm said earlier. He has this wealth in his house. He turns around and gives it to those who are in need. By giving, we show that we're not tethered to our money, you see. If we're willing to give to the need, then we're not tethered to it. And then our hearts are indeed tethered to God himself and his kingdom and all that we're doing there. So may God keep us from temptation, and deliver us from evil, because money is the root of all kinds of evils. And here we need deliverance from that so that we can use money for a tool in his kingdom. May he forgive us of our debts in this area and unite our hearts even closer to him as we store up treasures in heaven. Let's labor to do that, and let's ask him to help us. Let's pray.